Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project this week is going to focus attention, of course, on Helly Thorning-Schmidt. And if you don't know who that is, well, you haven't been paying attention. Helly Thorning-Schmidt, I tell you. The Media Project, Dr. Alan Shartok is here, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Professor?
Helly.
Thorning-Schmidt. And Ira Fussfeld, publisher of the Daily Freeman.
Wasn't he the first baseman for the Mets during in the early 60s? Oh, no, that was Marv Thornberry.
Close, though. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, coming to you from Albany, New York, where we hope you'll enjoy our... A little opportunity to give you some commentary, analysis, and if we're lucky, a little insight into the media issues of the week. Helly Thorning-Schmidt, of course, is the Danish prime minister.
Of course.
And she became briefly famous in this country because she was touted by the tabloids, at least in New York City, at the memorial service for Nelson Mandela, sitting with David Cameron, the prime minister of England, on her left and the president of the United States on her right. And they did a little selfie.
Now, just in case people get the wrong idea about what a selfie is.
Right.
We should remind you that it's now ended up in the dictionary. Huh. And it's when you take a picture of yourself holding the camera in front of you, pointed at you. And that's called a selfie.
That's true.
So they took the selfie, right, Rex? Yeah. And the three of them there. Michelle was sitting right there.
Yes.
The president and... The Danish prime minister.
And the photograph that that got all over the world, it's not just the U.S., the Daily Mail got there, had Michelle Obama looking off, looking sober, somber, perhaps even unhappy, and the president and the two prime ministers grinning for the little smartphone camera that she was using.
Although when I saw a picture of them, an extended picture, Michelle was laughing. So here's a good example of the New York, despicable as it is, POST, trying to make trouble.
And the Daily Mail, of course,
yeah,
in the UK.
Well, yeah, a certain commonality and ownership,
there is.
Right? And so they would try to make trouble, and I think it's disgusting. It's expected of them. But, you know, I wonder whether there isn't some inert, implicit racism in all of this. You know, black man with the... attractive prime minister. It was disgusting.
The photographer who took it for Agence France-Presse said that sometimes, he said, photos can lie. He says, I read on social media that Michelle Obama seemed to be rather peeved on seeing the Danish prime minister take the picture. But he said, in reality, just a few seconds earlier, the first lady was herself joking with those around her, and her stern look was captured by chance.
Well, the other thing about that picture is that the suggestion of some about the picture was... Here was the attractive, as she seems to be, Danish prime minister with the president and the other prime minister on the other side. So there was that piece of it. And then the other people who are critics who feel like they need to go after the president for anything,
sure. It
was that it seemed disrespectful for them to be having fun as they appear to be having in this picture. And I don't know about you guys, but I turned on that service just as Obama was speaking. And if you saw it, behind Obama, behind what presumably was bulletproof glass, there were spectators. I mean, it's sort of like getting a bad seat at a concert behind the stage. But there were spectators, and they were dancing, and they were doing the South African rituals. It almost, I mean, not to to be disrespectful, but it almost looked like it looked like people outside the window of the Today Show.
Right.
But the point is, it was, as has been reminded by many people, this was a four-hour memorial/celebration in concert with the way practices are in South Africa. So the selfie, the feminism aside, it was not disrespectful to them having some fun at this thing.
But it does underscore how, as the photographer for AFP said, and I think this is the significant broader point, is that sometimes photos can lie. Sometimes what you see and capture in a single still moment doesn't really tell the truth of what's going on.
But it also says something to us, as I sort of tried to say before, that there are certain newspapers which will predictably play it. Post is one of them. Post clearly doesn't like Obama. And, you know, if they found him picking his nose, you'd see that in there, too.
What about the Fox News coverage of the handshake? My goodness, president of the United States shook the hand of Raul Castro, the president of Cuba.
Well, I thought it was great. I mean, here's the Mandela philosophy, which is we have to reach out to each other. We have to share. We have to think about what the other guy's needs are. And here the president goes up and he says, you know, the press guy says it was just, you know, a reflex. You shake a hand. But I thought it was great. And I think it's damn near about time we started to think that way.
Well, another way that photography can lie is another criticism of Obama was that he seemingly was bowing down to shake the hand of Castro.
Oh, I dare say
that Raul Castro is probably a half a foot shorter than Obama. And he had to bend down to shake his hand.
Exactly. Fox News did an in-depth report on the handshake. The reporter, the anchor, Bill Hemmer, saying, a journalist contacted us today saying this would not have been in the spirit of Mandela. It would have been disrespectful to the spirit of Mandela.
He shook the hand?
Yes.
Well, that's absurd. Mandela, one of his first visits was, I believe, to Cuba.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. He considered Cuba an ally in the anti-apartheid movement long before the United States was, as a matter of fact.
Well, that's true.
This is a sort of rewriting of history, but it does, again, demonstrate, I think, two things. It demonstrates, A, how visuals can sometimes not tell a story. In fact, I sometimes think, I'm not just saying this because you're here in a radio professional, Alan, but I sometimes think that radio is the truest of the media because you capture actual voices without having almost the opportunity for visual misstatement that television can present without some of the show business.
Well, we all know, I mean, it's enough to make anybody throw up because we've all heard it so many times, but we all know Jack Kenny probably wouldn't have been president of the United States after the debates because Nixon won on the radio and Kennedy won on television.
By the way, I have to tell you, speaking of radio stories, of course, people can't see us here on the radio. You know, I sing with Albany Pro Musica.
So
a friend of mine who was in the group said that he was riding in the car with his wife and they were listening to this show. And she said, as we were talking, she said, I like that guy. And he said, oh, well, that's Rex Smith. I sing with him. You know, I've mentioned him before. He's the editor of the newspaper. And there was a little pause and we went on a little bit longer. And she said, no, not that guy.
I
like that guy. No, she meant you. She was the it was Alan. It's not that guy. That guy.
Well, I say God bless her.
Sure. I say she's the one.
Anyway, okay, more on Fox News. And here's a little bit of good news if you're a reporter. There's a Fox News reporter. We reported this story before. Fox News reporter Jenna Winter was subpoenaed to appear in Colorado in the case involving the multiple homicide out there, the Dark Knight Rising shooting in the movie theater. Mm. She fought in New York State to say, I should not have to disclose my sources because the New York State Shield Law protects me. And New York's highest court, the Court of Appeals, ruled narrowly, 4-3, that she is right, that anonymity of confidential sources is a core, if not the central concern underlying New York's journalist privilege, wrote Victoria Grafeo, an associate judge of the Court of Appeals.
Well, I got a couple of things to say about that. The New York State Court of Appeals is one of the most liberal courts in the country.
I don't know that that's true anymore, by the way.
Well, it's pretty liberal. And 4-3 doesn't exactly scream out at you that, you know, that this is going to be red-letter law. Because sooner or later, this is probably going to get to the Supreme Court of the United States. And to put it mildly, that court has a different political complexion than does the New York State Court of Appeals, our highest court. So that's one thing. Number two, there's no question that if a reporter is involved in something in Colorado, that crosses state lines. And that makes it federal jurisdiction as opposed to New York State. So I think what you're going to find is that we're not done yet on this one. 4-3, that's pretty close.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, that 4-3 jumped out at me because the state, as Alan said, this court does tend to be more liberal than others. And you're right, if it goes to the Supreme Court, like, you can't be confident if you are hoping to appeal the Shield Law.
It'll be 5-4 there.
It defaults to what we've said dozens of times in this program. We need a federal Shield Law, and hopefully there is some motivation in Washington. Eric Holder suggested that there would be after, you know, the contretemps several months ago regarding reporters, and hopefully that'll happen.
Obama got himself into a little trouble on this.
Yeah,
issue.
But it's a tricky thing. Yes, it's across state lines, but if I'm a reporter based in New York where I have a Shield Law, you know, which law do you defer to? I mean, this is the one that we're working within here.
Well, this is a narrow exception the court holds, but it is nevertheless one that holds, so that if you are working for a New York-based company, it seems to suggest that wherever you are working, you're protected by the New York State Shield Law. Very interesting. I still want to make the point that this is not necessarily such a liberal court. The judge who wrote this decision used to be the counsel to the State Assembly Republican minority. It was a liberal court 20 years ago. It is not so much so anymore, nor is it always a unanimous court, which it used to be. These sort of split decisions are not unusual. And it is kind of interesting that the dissenting opinion was written by Judge Robert Smith, whose son, Ben Smith, is the editor of BuzzFeed. Now, I don't know if you follow BuzzFeed, but BuzzFeed is this cool website with a lot of funny lists, you know, 12 things about this and 20 things about that. But it is also now investing in an investigations team and doing significant original reporting. It's kind of all things to all people.
So. Well, you know, it is interesting, Rex, that we're hearing more and more about the Yahoos of the world and BuzzFeed and Politico hiring reporters close to the ground. In other words, close to New York State, doing New York State politics, things like that. I am saying, so far, I'm not seeing too much product. I'm seeing, you know, the governor will be in New York this morning, but I'm not seeing the stuff that brings to mind
groundbreaking reporting.
Yeah.
You do have to wonder. It'll be interesting to see the new Politico offshoot in New York State, Capital New York, has put out its price list, which ranges ultimately after the introductory period. It is $6,500 a year to subscribe to the Politico Pro.
You know what you're going to get? 500 people. That's what you're going to get. We did something.
It'll be the good 500 people. Then.
Well, it'll be the lobbyists and it'll be the other guys. So I got news for you. We did this here at Public Radio in New York State. We put out something which we had a neat name for, the Shartok Report. and that's about what we got. You know, I mean, I spent all weekend on the phone begging people for anything, any tidbit that they had, any piece of gossip that they had, putting it in. But I don't think the masses are that concerned with New York State politics. I wish it was so, but they're not.
But, you know, with the internet, this is the difference. We don't have to be a mass medium anymore. I mean, we've made our livings. We've certainly sustained ourselves through being mass media. Even a local newspaper like the Times Union or the Daily Freeman is a mass medium in its own community. And now you can narrowcast. You can bring these newsletters to a few hundred people. And if it's the right people, you know, they might pay
for it. It's sort of disturbing in this sense. And it's titled Albany Pro. What you're saying is going to cost $6,500 a year. And Albany Pro suggests who they want their readers to be, the insiders. And we presume, all three of us, that it's going to be a relatively small number of people who are going to be paying this supposed independent media outlet. But the nature of it, it just seems like that independent media outlet is working for only the insiders.
And probably writing it off as a business.
The subscribers, without question. But I guess this means that they will then, they meaning the Albany Pro people, will be providing information, presumably important, interesting information, only to people who can afford it, as opposed to, as you say, the mass people. So there's going to be people who are going to be shut out of this information. And that doesn't seem democratic somehow to me.
Well, we're moving from that very interesting area.
Let's talk about the Shartok Report.
No, I'm thinking about whether historians should be part of reportage. I say that because take Nelson Mandela, who we all I mean, I adore the guy, but the fact of the matter is our CIA and the other guys in the beginning were terrible where Mandela was concerned. And, you know, there was obviously a closeness between the apartheid group and our agencies. Now we see Eastern Europe, former Eastern Europe, communist bloc countries, and all of a sudden we see one of them that says, we're not signing on with the EU because we were afraid of alienating the Russians. And then all of a sudden, thugs start to go after the embassy and protest the fact that they're not pro-West, they're turning pro-East, or they're staying pro-East. Does anybody write in a newspaper, or how much do we see in a newspaper in which it says, well, you know, the CIA has been pulling this stuff for years and years. How do we know who those thugs are working for? But we can tell you that back in the old days, they were working for us. So is it part of our... You see my point?
Well, yes. I hope that... The problem, I think, is that while good reporting, depth reporting would include that historical perspective, there isn't as much time available in the broadcast, space available in the mass media, or interest in the part of the audience for that to get across. You can find that kind of analysis that you're looking for in targeted media, but you won't find it as much in those newspapers.
Well, Rex, let me just take a little bit of issue with you. Not that I don't have ultimate respect for everything that you say, but, or as somebody once said to Rex, why don't you just slap him? But if you read some contemporary reports about some of this stuff, you would think that this is, you know, the people rising up and saying, we want to be with the United States and with the European Union, that there were 12 masked thugs who were leading this thing who disappeared. You know, come on. We know that when we put the Shah in place in Iran and all the rest of it, the company was paying the bills.
Well, this is why the context, I mean, I really think you're right. I don't know that we're disagreeing with it, because I think the reporting needs to have that kind of context. Here's another example more close to home. In Saratoga Springs, a citizens group has formed to advocate in favor of placing a casino there. This after voters in Saratoga County voted against the casino amendment in the balloting in November.
So who's the citizens group?
Who is the citizens group? Indeed, it is bankrolled by the Racino that hopes to get the license. Now, they're upfront about this. That is on their website. Yeah. They will point this out. The fact is, I'm pleased that when our newspaper reported about the press conference launching this citizens group, we didn't shy away from mentioning where the money comes from for this. This is not a popular uprising necessarily. It may ultimately represent the majority of citizens' views. We don't know that yet, but you have to give that kind of context if you're going to give readers the full truth.
Yeah, to Rex's point earlier, I tend to agree that a lot of what you're describing probably was reported, but it was reported
somewhere.
And never really drew much attention. Now there's much more chance of it drawing more attention because of the internet. There are so many sites out there, and you know, a Google search will bring you to places that you never knew existed.
Yeah. But you've got to have the impetus to get on and look for that stuff, as opposed to having somebody just say 13, you know, people attacked the embassy and they were followed by a lot of other people. I mean, I think it's very important that we have that context. And in all deference to Rex, I think that's terrific that they're talking about that. But we see it all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, there's a committee to save New York that is clearly a pro Cuomo group and made up of people who have various business interests in
It basically went dark once there was a court ruling that suggested that they had to reveal who their donors were.
Right.
They stopped operating. So, you know, sunlight often scares away some of these things. You know, it's a very different situation. I'm just thinking about what's happened in the Kremlin recently. You know, Vladimir Putin has basically dissolved the existing news agencies over there that were just a few years ago beginning to get a measure of independence so that the people in Russia could get access to information that they could trust. And now he's reorganizing everything.
And he put as the head of it, the head anti-gay guy.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah,
I mean, really sort of a reactionary. And he does that in the tradition of Russian autocracy. I mean, is there really any major difference between Catherine the Great? Well, maybe something. And Putin, you know, I think that anybody who thinks that there isn't a national character that exists in some of these countries doesn't know what they're talking about.
Get ready for about 2 weeks during and weeks before of coverage during the Olympics, and it'll be interesting to see how NBC and others portray the feature stories that will they paint this picture of this glorious country and its people, or will they get into some of these issues, or can they not for fear of being booted out or somehow somebody pulling the plug on them somewhere?
Well, it's a very interesting situation because you are exactly right. We have the Olympics really plays into this because the official news agency that Putin dissolved, RIA Novosti, is one of the official sponsors of the Olympics and had been really deeply involved in planning for it. And now here we are with the news media from around the world showing up to cover this. And I think you're right that it's essential that it be pointed out that people in Russia are going back to Soviet-era clampdowns on what they can find out and what they can't.
And before that, the Tsar.
Yeah, right. I understood that objective journalism distilled is absolutely not in demand, said the man who is now running the news agency there. The basic difference between post-Soviet and Western journalism is that for us, it is necessary to create values and not to renew them, to produce values and not to reproduce them, as is basically done in the West. So he's basically saying we're going to create the values through our news media that we want to see in our country, and we will instill that by controlling the media.
Well, that sounds like Roger Ailes.
Wahoo! It's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith here. If you want to offer your thoughts, join the conversation, send us something at media@wamc.org, media@wamc.org, and we'll try to do something about that. Hey, closer to home, by the way, speaking of control of the media, in New York City, there is news with the changing of the guard at the New York Police Department, a new public, what they call DCPI, Deputy Commissioner for Public Information, and a new commissioner coming in. There is access to crime reports at local police precincts in New York City, which had been taken away. And even though we are sitting here upstate and a lot of our listeners are around the country, I think it's important for us to take note of this because a lot of police agencies these days are finding a way to keep reporters away from police reports, which are sort of fundamental to reporting on what's going on in the community.
And I think a lot of newspapers really do play the crime reports prominently, and I think a lot of people want to see them.
Oh, gosh. My small newspaper, for as long as I've worked there, the joke around town is as long as the Freeman has the police news and the obits, it will sell papers. And that's what people look for is, as soon as they look in their newspaper. I don't understand the motivation on the part of the NYPD to make it difficult to get this information, because it seems to me that most police agencies like to have stories about what they're doing so that they can help justify their existence in the community.
Well, I think that the other side of that is that there's a bit of braggadocio going on, particularly in New York, in which the lowered crime rate is always being touted. So if you have access to all of these local things, one and one makes two, you add them all up, and maybe you'll find some dissonance between what the police are telling you you're getting and what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, if there's much crime news in general, it shows that the city is not completely under control.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose no news is probably good news from the police standpoint.
But theoretically, any citizen should be able to walk into any police precinct and ask to look at the police blotter.
That'd be a great thing to get our interns to do. Yeah. Walk right into the police precincts and say, we'd like to see your police blotter and see what the reaction is.
This has been, what is that called, a freedom of information check. This has been done in various states where newspaper, and it's probably time for us to do it again. You go into various municipalities and say, let me see such and such a document.
Right.
And it's amazing how many of them refuse to give it to you, notwithstanding the fact that it's all covered by the Freedom of Information Law.
And who are you?
You're right, right. They want you to register for it and say, why do you need it? You do not have to tell people that, folks.
What's your name?
All right. That's all we got time for this week. Come back next week, we hope, for another episode of The Media Project.
They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ding-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people, it's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown.